into today's message, which is titled, Were You Not Cleansed? This is a story that I've preached before on Thanksgiving. It's a passage that I've preached from before around the Thanksgiving time because it has to do with giving thanks. You know, it's a very natural and almost, you know, it's a passage that I think of when it comes to the idea of Thanksgiving. But there are certain aspects of this story that I think when I was reading it and when I was thinking about it and reflecting on it this week that I really wanted to share with the church community, share with you all today. And so, you know, as we consider some of the things that we're going through, our lives are ever-changing, right? Our lives are dynamic. We're going through ups and downs. We're experiencing blessings. Sometimes we feel like we're alone. Sometimes we're going through spiritual highs and lows. And we're maturing or growing every day. Or sometimes we're even, you know, getting further and further away from God. And so, you know, wherever you are in your faith, wherever you find yourself, let's take a moment of time to reflect on this passage and just think about it together, to track through it together, to really take a moment of time to look back on our lives, to think about, you know, the moments in which God met us, in which God helped us, He healed us, He, you know, pulled through for us. And whatever that springs up inside of your heart, you know, I hope that you will allow yourself to respond to God in whatever way you see fit, whatever way you kind of naturally respond. You know, I hope that you will have the courage and the strength to do that. So, you know, today the story is not very hard. It's not a difficult story to remember. And it's not a story that Jesus told. It's not a parable. It's not something that had a lesson inside of it. It's not something that has some kind of like moral attached to it. It's just what happened during Jesus's ministry. And so we're going to try to draw some conclusions. We're going to try to draw out some things that will be helpful in our faith lives. Some of the things that maybe will make us reconsider the way that we've been relating with God, just based on what happened. So again, you know, the difference between this passage and some of the passages that I've preached from before, sometimes I've preached on parables in which Jesus had a point. He had a lesson that he wanted to teach. And so he would tell a story, or he would kind of give a hypothetical, right? He would make up a story that would drive at his point so that he could teach a lesson about the kingdom. This is not one of those passages. This is just something that happened to Jesus Christ. This is something that he experienced. And through that experience, he's teaching us something about himself. He's teaching us something about God. He's teaching us something about the way that we should be living our lives, the way that we should be reacting and relating to God. And it's something that's meant for us to read and reflect on. We're supposed to reflect on some of the things that we see in the story, some of the things that we see in terms of what Jesus asks, what he expects, and to really start questioning ourselves. Where would I be? What would I do? Who am I most like in this story? And so to just recap the story for all of us, Jesus was traveling down to Jerusalem. He's walking along the border of Galilee and Samaria. We don't know exactly what side of that border he was on. You know, they would kind of walk, a lot of the Jews would skirt around Samaria because they were not welcome in that place. And we don't know exactly where he was, but he was somewhere there. And, you know, we get the sense that he was close enough to Samaria that the community of lepers and the community of those who are kind of like cast out, the marginalized community, would include Samaritans in it. We hear as much from what Luke teaches us. And as he's traveling, you know, again, you know, we find ourselves in so many situations where ministry occurs in places that Jesus didn't really intend it to happen. Jesus has a destination. He has a goal. He's trying to get to Jerusalem. He has something to do in Jerusalem. But along the way, people kind of interrupt his journey, and they call out to him. And that's where a lot of ministry takes place. And so he says, Luke teaches us that he was going into a village. Maybe he was going to rest. Maybe he was going to stop and eat. Maybe, you know, he was going into a village. And probably at the gate, probably located at the gate of that village where the marginalized would be kind of stationed to beg visitors and to beg those who are passing in and out of the gate, you know, maybe for their daily bread, maybe just for, you know, someone that they could reach out to for help. You know, that's where these people would go to be seen. Otherwise, they didn't have status. Otherwise, they, you know, they were cast out from their families. They were not viable members of community. You know, they were not welcome in places. You know, they couldn't move freely. You know, these are people who had all of their identity stripped, where once they had a name, where once they had a title, where once they were the son of somebody, where once they could, you know, participate in social behavior and they could go to the markets, they could go and worship, where once they could do those things, these are people who had lost all of it. Nobody called them by their names anymore. They didn't have friends. They didn't have rights. These are people who were considered the lowest of low in their society. And just allowing yourself to kind of creatively and, you know, enter into the story, you know, just imagine if that something like that had happened to you. Where once you had a family, where once you had a name, where once you had a future, you know, you had dreams, you had goals. You know, you had people that loved you. You had people that you loved and you cared about. You know, it's not very, you know, that's who we are, right? We all live in community. We have families. And, you know, there's a certain level of status and identity that we're secure with. You know, people don't call me Leper. They call me Edwin. And in doing so, you know, we have families. We have places to live. There's some level of security that comes with, you know, our identity. These are people who didn't have any of that. And just imagine the life that they would have to live. Imagine the difficulty of the day-to-day. Imagine how difficult it is to get up each day and say, today, all I have to do, all I get to do, is to try to live one more day. To try to get enough to eat so that I don't starve to death. I have to go around and announce to the world that I am unclean, so they avoid me. I can't have conversation with people. The only people that I can be with are those who are like me. Lepers. You know, they are really the untouchables of society. These are people who couldn't hold jobs, they didn't have professions, they had no dreams. You know, these are people that were completely brought down. They had no dignity. They had no identity. They were not welcome anywhere. No one would consider them a friend. They were just people to avoid. Touch that person and you become unclean. Touch that person and you might become a leper. You know, we have to understand the gravity of what it meant to be a leper in their society. To understand the gravity of what happened and to be able to weigh the reactions. To see what you would do. How would you respond? You have to put yourself into the story sometimes and say, what would I do here? And given the circumstance, given something that's analogous to this story, what would I do? And what have I done in the past? What does Christ expect of me? What would I do? Because the Word of God is supposed to inform us and it's supposed to dictate the relationship that we have with God. It's teaching us about who God is. What he likes, what he expects from his people. So as we can kind of make relation, as we can kind of relate this to our lives, as we can apply this to things that are more similar for us, more familiar for us, it's supposed to guide us into understanding what we're supposed to do. So they're found in a place of deep despair. They have no honor. They're just living a life full of shame. And back then in their society, it was considered or it was believed that they were like that because of sin, because they were bad people, because they deserved it. They did something to deserve that leprosy. It was a mark to kind of point out that they were not loved by God, that they were not accepted. They couldn't even worship. They couldn't worship. They couldn't even go to cleanse themselves in the way that others did when they went to the temple, offering sacrifices, being viable member of being viable members of society. They had no chance. They had no hope. And so probably they heard of this man named Jesus. They had probably heard from other people. They probably heard the whispers. There was probably a lot of talk about this man or this rabbi or this just person who had power, who was healing people. And so imagine the surprise. Imagine that moment of excitement. Imagine that moment of hope. They're just in a town that's on the border of Galilee and Samaria. It's not like Jesus planned to go through there. It wasn't Jesus' destination. So imagine the hope that they feel when they hear or they can kind of sense the presence. You know, Jesus walking and maybe a crowd was following him. Or maybe he was so popular and so famous at that time that, you know, even in the town ahead, they were preparing for him to come. And I don't know the exact circumstance, but these 10 lepers knew who he was. They call him by name. And imagine that moment of joy, that moment of hope, that excitement inside of their hearts. This is a man who can do something. This is a man who can change my destiny. Where once every day they just got up and they just thought to themselves, how can I just get through this day with no hope, with no dreams, with no way built into the culture, built into the society for me to get any kind of viability, for me to have anything for myself. Suddenly, this man walking, maybe he was just going to stop for a meal, maybe he was just going in to rest, but he represented everything to them. He represented that light. He represented hope. In a hopeless situation, Christ's presence is light. Christ's presence is hope. Now, when we feel that we are at our lowest, when we feel that nothing can improve, it is Christ who interrupts that thought. He walks to our town. He walks to us. He makes his presence known. And he's the one who can do something about the situation that you're in. It's something that I preached about last week. Being persistent. Being annoying, right? In a sense, just not giving up in your prayer lives. You know, and when you're really finding yourself worried about what's going on in the world, when you find yourself being anxious, when you feel like there's more worry in your heart than security, persistently call out to Christ. Just keep calling out his name. Keep lifting up that prayer. Shout it out. Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. He's there. He wants to hear you. He wants to help. He wants to heal. And so, you know, Jesus Christ represented that second chance to these lepers. A life that was completely lost, he was their hope for the future. A new life, a second chance, where once they were bound by their affliction, he represented a way out. He represented a chance to live a new life. So of course, you know, they're not going to miss that chance, right? So Luke teaches us that the men met Christ. They were respectful of him. They knew their place. They knew as a leper, they couldn't just run up to him, you know, grab him. So they stand at a distance and they call out. They cry out. And just, you know, sometimes we lose this in literature. We lose some of the emotion of text. You know, once I placed myself inside of this story, once I thought about, you know, really their society and their place and the status of lepers, I could almost hear their voices. I could almost hear their cries. You know, you think they did some kind of like superficial, like, oh, Jesus, help us. Jesus, help. With what was at stake, with what was on the line, they must have cried out with all of their heart. You know, they must have cried out with so much earnestness, you know, so much desperation. You know, nothing else to turn to, no one else to turn to. Who else could help? What else could really save them from the situation that they were in? Jesus, Master, have pity on us. They must have been screaming at the top of their lungs. They must have been so persistent in calling out to Christ. You have to see me. Christ, look at me. Jesus, look at me. No one looks at these people. No one cares what they say. The most that they'll get is someone tossing coins in their direction. The most that they'll get is this thing that they ask for is pity. And pity usually is kind of the reaction, or the reaction for pity is for someone to just toss coins in their direction. But Jesus represented hope. He represented new life. They're screaming, and they don't care. They don't care if their voice is cracking. They don't care if people are telling them to be quiet. These people had to have been screaming out to Christ with what was on the line, with who Jesus was and what he represented. They must have been scratching and clawing just to get Jesus' attention. And of course, we know Jesus' heart. When he saw them, he said, okay, go and show yourselves to the priests. We have to think about what Jesus Christ said to these people. He doesn't promise healing. He doesn't promise them anything. He just gives them an order. He just gives them direction. He says, go, show yourselves to the priests. What is he instructing them to do? Go. Go to Jerusalem. Go to the temple. Go walk now to the place that you're not welcome, to the place that you're not allowed to go. Go now to Jerusalem. It's, you know, ironic, right? Jesus is saying, go where I am going right now, right? Because Jesus is going to Jerusalem as well. But he says, go show yourselves to the priests. He sets them on his path, where he's going. He doesn't say anything else. You know, what would they have been holding on to? These, like, they're so desperate that they're willing to listen to that. You know, a lot of them might have questioned that. Why can't you heal us right now? What do you mean, go show ourselves to the priests? They're just going to yell at us. They're just going to say that we can't enter. There are only certain days and certain places that we can go. We don't have access like that. We can't just show up and be like, hey, priest, I want you to see me. And so there must have been a lot of emotions that they're going through. You know, they were so hopeful. They were calling out to Christ. He represented their hope. And he just says, go show yourself to the priests. What, the priests are going to do something? I thought Jesus was going to do something for me. In any case, Jesus gives them direction. He says, go show yourselves to the priests. They must have been so desperate that they actually listened to this. And they don't know why. They probably tried everything else. All right, well, if Jesus says to do it, then we'll just do it. What have we got to lose? Maybe when we get there, we'll be cleansed. You know, maybe the priest has something for us. Maybe the priest is the one who unlocks this problem for us. In any case, they listen to what Christ says. And the Bible teaches us that as they were going, is very clear about this, but as they were going, they were cleansed. Probably cleansed of their leprosy, if we read it in context. They were healed. It's like the way that Luke describes this, and I felt this even as I read it, but it almost does like an injustice to like what just happened, the magnitude of what just happened. That these 10 people who were lepers, who had no hope for life and, you know, being members of society again, and no identity, no security, they had nothing for themselves. As they were going, they were cleansed. That's like a hallelujah moment. You know, this is the climax. You're supposed to sing praises and say amen. And, you know, like, you were supposed to start praying and really, like, shouting out in church. Like, yeah. But it's almost like, kind of like the afterthought, right? Like, it's almost like the story just kind of progresses from that point. As they were going, they were cleansed. It's kind of anticlimactic. Because the point of the story is not just the healing part. It's not just the miracle. It's the part that comes after that really is supposed to get into our hearts. It's the part after that I really hope to leave an impression on in your heart. One of them, when he saw he was healed, one person walking along the road, he just looks over and is like, I'm healed of my leprosy. And probably overjoyed, you know, so excited, right? So happy, so filled with, you know, like emotion, comes back to Jesus. We don't know how long they went. We don't know how far it was. The story just says as they were going, it could have been a long distance off. They might have been closer to Jerusalem than they were to where they came from. But one person stops, and almost in a way, if you really think about it from kind of a literal sense, and you think about it, if you really kind of strictly read the words, he almost disobeys Jesus's word, right? Go show yourself to the priests. He doesn't even go. He doesn't fulfill that. He's so overwhelmed with emotion. He's so overwhelmed with thankfulness. He's so happy about the new life that he gets to live that he runs back. He goes back. And in my kind of understanding, my reading of it, I can't imagine that he would have taken a long time. I think he was so happy, so excited to go back into Christ's presence, realizing who he is, realizing that this man is truly the Messiah, that he is God, that he is Lord, and he needs to be back in his presence. Not the temple. Think about that. Not the temple. Not the representation of God's presence, but the real presence of God. Not the institution, not the system, not the place of religion and the place of worship that was according to their custom, their culture. He made a beeline to be in the presence of God, to be in the presence of his Lord. Now, we don't know what the other 9 did. You know, it's up to our imaginations. It's up to, you know, it's up to us to decide what would we do in that situation. And we can probably apply that into their lives as well. What would they have done? Probably the majority of them would have actually gone to the temple. That's what Jesus instructed. Maybe they thought, okay, you know, this is, I'm healed, but I don't want it to come back. And so I need to listen to Jesus' words. I need to go to the temple. That makes sense, right? It makes perfect sense. It's logical. And in a sense, it's what probably I would do. After having not been able to worship, after not being able to bring sacrifice, I probably would have continued to the temple to reinsert myself into society, to show people, this is the new me, this is the life I get to live. Maybe they walked and they went to some kind of food stall or some restaurant. Maybe they went and they went back to their families. Maybe they went to their friends. Maybe they found the person, you know, the person that's closest to them. You know, their siblings, and they were just celebrating together. We would excuse almost anything that these people did based on where they were and where they were now. You would excuse almost any behavior based on how excited they must have been. But one person said, I need to be in the presence of my God. You know, Jesus makes it clear that even though the nine continued, maybe, that even though the nine continued and went to the temple, maybe they offered sacrifice. And what would you consider that? That's considered worship. Maybe they did the holy thing. Maybe they did the religious thing. But Jesus Christ wanted the relational thing. He wanted the people to be back in his presence, physically before him, together with him. Not just the religious act of worship, but to actually praise, to actually worship relationally, face to face. And so we can't blame them on a human level for whatever those other nine people did. I can't blame them. I am them. I would do those things. I would do all different things with that new chance, new lease on life. I would do so many things. All the things that I hoped for, all the things that I wished for, I would do those things. All the things that I dreamed about when I was a leper, when I had no future, when I had no status, I would be so excited to do those things. But the thing that we must not forget is who cleansed us, who cleaned us, who forgave us. And the fact that we were cleansed is supposed to remind us of who cleansed us. And so while it's a very noble thing to continue on that journey, continue on to those priests, and you know, some of these people probably did. They fulfilled the word of Jesus Christ by going and showing themselves to the priest. But they chose the second best thing. They didn't choose the best thing, to be back in God's presence, to be in relationship with him, to be able to hear his words, to be able to touch his feet, to be able to throw yourself down at Christ's feet. And you sense that Christ was disappointed. And we know that this Samaritan, this one man, chose the right thing. And so it sounds a little bit controversial to say. And I'm sharing it because this is something that, you know, came deep into my heart while I was reading this passage. Now, sometimes, instead of relationship, instead of being personal, instead of being intimate with God, we're more comfortable doing the worship that we're accustomed to. We'd rather praise. We'd rather do church service, right? We'd rather do something that's religious, that is right, that is considered proper. And nobody would fault you for that. But maybe the reaction, maybe the response that we're supposed to have, since we are a people who are cleansed, maybe not of leprosy, but of our sins. You know, people who had no future, people who were bound and dead to sin, and Christ giving us his life so that we could live a new life. And maybe sometimes, because we're scared to be in close and intimate and personal relationship with God, because we're scared to just face him again, we'd rather do the kind of safer thing. We'll worship. We'll be Christian. We'll be churchgoers. We'll do the religious activity. You know, my response to Christ cleansing me is to do church service, to go to church. Yeah, but what about what Christ desires? For you to be at his feet. For him to see your face. for him to hear your voice, for you to hear his voice. And that's the aspect of this story that I want to leave with you today. It's because this person came back into his presence. What the other nine did was probably not really wrong. It's acceptable, it's understandable. And I really think that many of them, the majority of them, that most of them would have continued on their journey and went and gone to the temple and showed themselves to the priest. They probably did a lot of good things on the way. They probably told people about what Christ did. They were probably praising. They probably walked into the temple courts and were singing praises. They had to have been ecstatic. It's a good thing that they did. But the best thing to do is to enter into Jesus' presence, to go find him again, to retrace the steps and say, Jesus, you cleansed me. I want to walk with you. I want to see you. I want to touch your feet. And praising God to me means that I'm bowing down in your presence. Not just in a worship service at the temple. Not just by preparing a burnt offering. You know, not just being able to commune with people inside of the temple courts. But to go back to the source of the healing. Christ, I just need to see you again. I need to bow myself down at your feet. So Jesus, he asks, weren't all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Christ has an expectation that once he does these things, that we draw near to him. Where once we were foes, where once there was a wall, where once there was something that divided us from God's presence, you know, the sin that bound us, the sin that was so, you know, that kept us at an arm's length. You know, it didn't promise us a future. It promised us death. It didn't promise us a place in God's kingdom. It didn't count us. It didn't allow us to be God's children. And where once we had that stain, Christ cleansed us. Christ cleansed us and pulled us into his family, pulled us into his presence. And sometimes we're more comfortable saying, okay, and I'll respond to you through religious practice. I'll go through institutions. I'll go through things that are already set in place that teach me about the relationship that I have, or how I can cultivate my faith, or how I can be a Christian or a better person, or how I can, you know, I'll go through certain avenues. But Christ was expecting the direct one-to-one relationship. He was expecting the face-to-face. He was expecting that thanksgiving to happen before him, to happen in front of him, not at the temple, not before the priests. Where are the other 9? Where are you? Who are you? Are you the one that goes back and says, I need to see you again. I need to hear your words again. I need to bow down at your feet. Whatever time I get to spend with you, that's precious. I want intimacy. I want something personal. I want something where I can see you, I can feel you, I can touch you. Or are you willing to do also the perfectly acceptable, I will do religious things. I will do things that I was taught through my culture and through my tradition. I'll continue on to the temple. We're missing a chance. We're missing an opportunity. Clearly, Christ was pleased with what the one person did. And he's waiting for you to do the same. He's waiting for you. You were cleansed. Were you not cleansed? Were your sins not forgiven? Did Christ not die on the cross for you? And up until this point in your life, have you thrown yourself to go back? Have you thrown yourself into a place where you're saying, Jesus Christ, the most important thing right now is for me to have you, to be able to be in your presence, to have relationship with you, to have intimacy with you? Or are you going to continue on just doing Christian things, Christian activity, and allowing yourself to think that the religious institutions that are in place are good enough, that you don't need that personal and intimate relationship with God? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Have you not returned yet to Christ? And I remind you of this. They were cleansed, and of course it was a deep despair, a deep problem, a huge problem that they were saved from. But that's a problem that occurs in this life. It's limited. The problem that Christ saved us from is bigger than leprosy. It's bigger than not being a part or a viable member of society. It's bigger than losing family or not having a job or not being able to work. It's bigger than that. He saved you from death. He saved you from hell. He allowed you to enter into his family. He gave you a right. He gave you kind of the ability to be an heir to the kingdom of God. He gave you a place in heaven. He gave you a place in eternity. Have you returned to Jesus yet? Have you thanked him yet? Have you thrown yourself down at his feet yet? Or are you continuing on the road towards the temple to show yourselves to priests? Jesus ends this story with really interesting words, and I had a hard time. I really did. I had a hard time really understanding what Jesus meant. He says, "Then he said to him, 'Rise and go. Your faith has made you well.'" But that word "made you well" is a really tricky one to translate because it can mean different things. He said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith, the faith that you showed to come back to my presence, to come back to me to thank me, and that was your spiritual act of worship. That was you praising God. It was your journey back to me, to find me, to be back in my presence. That's the way that you chose to praise. And that action, that faith, that has made you well." That's the NIV translation, but the Greek word is very ambiguous. Because Jesus says to that person, "Your faith has healed you." It can be read that way. "Your faith has made you well. Your faith has rescued you." Or you can read it, "Your faith has saved you." I don't know which one it is. Even with context, even with study, I'm not sure exactly which one it is. But the other nine didn't hear these words. The other nine were cleansed. But the other nine didn't hear these words. "Rise and go. Now go. Now live your life. You found me. You came back to me. You thanked me. You entered into a personal face-to-face with me. Now go. Your faith has rescued you. Your faith has saved you. Your faith has made you well." I don't know which one. But for sure it's different from what the other nine received. To hear those words coming from Jesus Christ, this was personal. These are words that we need to hear. And so the invitation to you is, the reminder to you today is, were you not cleansed? And where are you now? What should you do? How should you react? Let's find Jesus. More than the church activity, more than praise team or being an officer or having a title or doing church service, making meals, driving people, or like whatever other things we can attach to it, let's find Jesus. If you were cleansed, then find Jesus on a day-to-day relationship. Speak to him. Talk to him. Let him know about your life. This is what he desires. This is what he expects. And when you do that, that's praising God. That's worshiping God, to find Jesus Christ. And you will hear those words, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. Your faith has saved you. Your faith has rescued you. It gives you a chance to live your new life with the blessing of Jesus Christ. To not just receive the gift, and to be happy in the new life that you have, the new identity that you have, but to receive the gift, to honor the gift giver, and also, and then, continue on in your new life with Christ's blessing, after having done the best thing, after having done the right thing in Jesus' eyes. And maybe for some of us, though we've been cleansed, we haven't made that journey back to Christ. It's our time now. It's your chance now. Find Jesus Christ. Call out to him. Persistently call on his name. And don't stop until you've found him. No matter how long the miles are between wherever this man was cleansed, wherever he realized he was cleansed, he didn't stop until he found Jesus Christ. Be persistent in your walk. Be persistent in your faith. Be persistent in your prayer until you are back in Jesus' presence. He's the one who cleansed you. It's time for you to make that journey back to him. Not a walk to the temple, not a walk to the institution, but a walk into direct relationship with Jesus Christ. That's the invitation. That's the challenge that I leave with you today. Were you not cleansed? Will you not respond the way that this one man did? I hope and pray that you will. I bless you with the courage and the strength to find Christ.